The National Youth Risk Behaviour Surveillance System in the United States monitors six types of health risk behaviours that contribute to the leading causes of death and disability amongst youth and adults. These behaviours are often established during childhood and early adolescence and include behaviours that contribute to unintentional injuries and violence. Sexual behaviours that contribute to unintended pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases, including HIV. Alcohol, drug and tobacco use, unhealthy dietary behaviours and inadequate physical activity, along with the prevalence of obesity and asthma. Monitoring is very helpful in so many ways, but what can be done to prevent these behaviours? Stand by, Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. The risk factors for youth high-risk behaviours occur in a number of arenas. In some communities, alcohol and drugs are readily available and norms are favourable towards drug use. Within school, youth can lack commitment and not have a strong sense of pride and belonging. And again, the norm can be favourable for drug use. And youth may perceive that everybody else is doing it, so such behaviours are like a rite of passage to being grown up and cool. Lizzie chose a very high-risk path in her youth. Watch.
I remember I would sit in the therapist's office and she would say, "You have the drug history of a 40-year-old woman." And I'm sitting there, 18 years old, thinking, I don't have a problem because I'm not legal to drink. When I was 15, I tried smoking weed. And right before my parents pulled me out of public school, I tried experimenting with other drugs. I tried cocaine for the first time and started smoking cigarettes and drinking. And it wasn't until I met a boy, and he was much older than me. I was 15, he was 23, and I had tried heroin. And I didn't know what to expect, what to do, and I began intravenously using heroin. I went home one night and I remember my dad telling me how much he loved me and how much I meant to them, and it wasn't until I like sat back and realized that I was destroying my life, but my parents were also watching their little girl kill herself. And I went to bed, my mom came in my room at 3 a.m. and my dad came in behind her, and they both said they love me dearly, and behind them there was a large guy and a woman, and they said, "You know, we're here to help you, just come get your things." And from there I went to a wilderness program in Oregon. I spent 13 weeks in the wilderness, just no electronics, no nothing, and hiking everywhere with girls who had that same problem as I did and struggled, and we all shared our stories. And from it really did help me. And I got a letter there from my parents, and they said, "You know, we love you in this," but they also had found a school for me in Utah. It was equine therapy. We each got our own horse, and it just worked with, you know, depression, anxiety, and there was a psychiatrist there and everything. And it was great. I went there for about 1.5 to 2 years, and I met great girls, had a great counselor, and my relationship was slowly being restored with my parents. And for the first couple months, I was doing really good, and I, you know, got on the right track, back in school, found a new school, and that helped with my problems. I was back on medication, doing great, wasn't smoking cigarettes, and I was sober. And I ran into the same boy that I had met, and he asked me, he's like, "You want to go out tonight and do something?" And I, again, fell back into my old patterns and didn't really know what to do, and this was about the age of 18. Didn't know what to do. I intravenously every day began using heroin. If I didn't have it, I would made sure to get it. And without it, I was sick. My parents didn't know. They knew that I was struggling again. And even though I was hurting people and losing my family, the only person I was disregarding and not even realize I was hurting was myself.
She was certainly hurting herself. Today we have a practical expert on how to prevent youth high-risk behaviour, and we'll finally put together the dish that we've been preparing all week. Plus, Sean's here to keep us on our toes. But first up, the news. In the headlines today, parental disclosure linked to risk behaviours, teen driving fatalities down, and dietary omega-3 improves attention span. Adolescent disclosure to a parent is a powerful predictor of both risk-taking behaviour and poor health outcomes. 520 adolescents were surveyed regarding parental monitoring of things like their use of the phone, health, and money. 50% thought their parents were monitoring well, 25% thought it was excessive, and the other 25% thought that monitoring was insufficient. The insufficient group was less likely to disclose information to their parents and more likely to be involved in risky behaviours. So parents, perhaps you need a conversation with your adolescent about how much monitoring they think a good parent would do. From 2004 to 2013, teen driver fatalities declined by 55%, from 5,700 to 2,600, according to the latest figures from the CDC. Contributing to this drop are newer graduated driving licensing programs for 16 to 17-year-olds. Teens are also waiting longer to get their driver's license, and they're driving less, especially around cities. The risk of accidents remains the highest during the first few months of independent driving, especially in the youngest teens. So kids, challenge yourselves to avoid any crashes by using proper precautions, turning off your cell phone, and not talking while driving so that you can focus on what you and other drivers are up to. Dietary omega-3 improved symptoms of inattention in boys with and without ADHD in a double-blind, randomized control trial. The boys were required to eat 10 grams a day of either omega-3 fortified margarine or regular margarine for 4 months. Behavior scores were analyzed before, during, and after the intervention. Those using fortified margarine ate about 650 milligrams of EPA and DHA each day. At the end of the study, there were significantly lower inattention symptoms in both the regular group and the ADHD group. So moms, pay attention to diet if you want your kids to pay attention. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Today's interview was taped in Geneva, Switzerland at the Adventist Church's Global Conference on Health and Lifestyle. We interviewed one of the guest speakers, Dr. Gary Hopkins, Associate Research Professor at Andrews University in Michigan. I asked him how many youth are at risk of engaging in high-risk behaviors.
I think all of them are. And the reason I say that is because there are so many influences out there. We see kids from ideal families or what we would you and I might characterize as an ideal family get caught up in things that are dangerous, and we see kids who come from unideal situations sort of what we would think is naturally drift towards high-risk behaviors. And to think that anybody is immune from this stuff, I think, is somewhat naive, so I think everybody's at risk for it, you know. And I think it's our job to make sure that these kids can get through, they can navigate through life, even having used but been unharmed by it. We want to see kids do well in spite of the risk out there, because we can't get rid of the risk.
So what are the risks for these kind of behaviors? Say, for example, substance abuse. What risk factors are out there for these kids?
Well, I think you can measure them. Initially, actually, the discussion on what put kids at risk were generally kids of minority, kids of low socioeconomic status, and kids who didn't have parents in the home. Only one parent in the home. Those are the big risks. And what we've kind of done more recently in the last few years is say, rather than study risk, let's study protective factors. And let's study why it is that some kids come out of high-risk environments and do well. And that's the resilience paradigm. That's to say, you grew up in South Central Los Angeles and you're doing great. Your mom and dad were both in jail and you're terrific, and your parents were alcoholics, and you're not, and you were sexually abused, and you aren't. And those are the kind of, so what we're looking at rather than just risk today is we're looking at protective factors.
So what age do kids become at risk?
Well, they become at risk at the age that the parents start paying less attention to them. So if the parents are off and the kids are home alone at age 6, the kids can get involved in some pretty risky behaviors, which may not necessarily be drugs, unless the parents have drugs around the house, but it can be not paying attention to doing the things in life and not being responsible, whatever. And those will lead you towards risky behaviors at some point. And the risky behaviors, I think you and I want to talk about.
So what age should these protective interventions or these preventions start to come to play in a child?
As early as possible. And the reason they say that is that, if you don't mind, one example of what protects kids from high risk behaviors is kids who get engaged in community service. So when it snows in my hometown, where I live in North Idaho, and I've got a snow machine that I can push down the sidewalk and blow the snow, since my daughter lives four houses away, I can go down and get my six-year-old granddaughter. And she can get behind the snow machine and we can put down the sidewalk blowing snow in the air, and we can do it in the neighbor's sidewalk and the little lady two houses down who doesn't get out much. And when someone drives up, one of the things we know about community service is that it's one of the best predictors of avoiding teen pregnancy. So now imagine this. So here's Lexi and I, we're going down the sidewalk, snow's flying all over the place, and someone says, "What are you doing?" And we say, "We're preventing teen pregnancy." And we're doing it, get that, we're doing it at age six. Or if you're going to take food to somebody in a hospital and just to take, because you want, or a gift to someone in the hospital, you wouldn't have taken food, would you, in a hospital? They would kind of frown on that. And you took your kids along, you would be getting them involved in a prevention program at a very young age. So rather than think of prevention as we need to start giving instruction, we're going to think of prevention as, or we accurately think of prevention as, what are the things we can do that will protect kids from risk? And it's generally not information. It's other things.
Stay with us as we find out more of those other things. After the break, we'll finally put together the dish we've been prepping all week, but first, this.
Hi, honey, I'm home.
Hi, honey. What did you do to my car?
Well, I was driving in the snow and there's all the salt on the road and it just got all over the car. But if you go in and get cleaning materials, I'll wash your car for you.
Really?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, great. Here you go. I got something.
Apple juice to wash the car?
Well, it says freshly pressed apple juice, 100% juice, no added sugar, and it's made in the United States of America.
Don't you know that all the sugar naturally occurring in there is going to make a sticky mess on your car?
Oh, but there's no added sugar.
Well, this is naturally occurring sugar.
Oh.
So you just go back there and get something proper for me.
Okay. Here you go.
Oh, that's much better. Water's much better. But do you think this little bit of water is going to wash this big old car?
Well, we can try.
Oh.
We'll start with the window.
All right.
Okay, you ready?
Some things husbands have to put up with here.
I know. Here. Hey, honey, this looks great now.
I don't think so.
No?
No. Come and take a look.
Okay. Oh, you're right.
Now you get in there and you get the right quantity of water for me.
All righty.
That's much better, much, much better.
Okay.
Thank you for that. Now stand back there.
All right. You know, many people think that they can drink caffeinated drinks, tea, coffee, and juice all day, and that will be sufficient fluid for them.
Well, you know, the problem with that is that caffeinated drinks actually suck the water out of your system, and the fruit juice has too much sugar, so it'd be much better just to drink plain water.
That's right, and water is a good cleansing agent. Fruit juice, tea, coffee, they're not going to clean you.
And but, you know, the other problem is that thirst is not a good indicator, because people don't drink enough if they just go by thirst.
That's right, you need to drink at least a third more, so it's better to drink by volume. And let's say, have a bottle and drink several bottles a day, or 6 to 8 glasses of water. So here you go, doctor's orders.
Well, I'll drink to that, Doc. That's mighty good stuff.
Ah, yeah.
We're back, and it's the last stage. We're putting together our roast vegetable tartlets. So, Phil, what are we going to add to our roast vegetable filling?
Well, we've got the filling, so what we're going to add is a cup of roasted plum tomatoes, 16 gaita olives, and you'll want those pitted, of course, 1 tablespoon of chopped parsley, 2 ounces of Fontina or Asiago cheese, and 3 tablespoons of grated sesame Parmesan cheese.
Wonderful.
So we're taking this, we're adding a few more ingredients, and then we're going to put it all together into a beautiful tartlet.
All right.
So I'm going to add these ingredients, if you don't mind rolling the dough out. And again, with this dough, it needs to be refrigerated. You'll work best with it cold, so you want to take it directly from the refrigerator to the table to roll it out, and it'll make it much easier on you.
And I'm cheating. I'm putting it straight on the baking paper.
There's no reason not to be to take it easy.
Because it's so difficult to handle this dough. It's so soft that if I do this, I can just put it straight in the oven. And you can see I've also put some plastic wrap over the top so that it has no contact with anything that could tear it.
You're playing it safe.
I am.
I'm cutting up these tomatoes that we roasted earlier just to make it a little bit smaller and easier to eat.
Now, this is 1/4 of the dough, so you would have 4 of these to make 4 tartlets.
And I was also going to say that the gaita olives can sometimes be hard to find. Mm. So if the local grocery store doesn't have them, you can always use Kalamata olives or something like that. What you want is that good olive flavor.
Yeah.
Okay, so everything's cut. We're just gonna mix it around here. And this is an amazing filling full of all kinds of great vegetables, as our viewers have seen us make throughout the week.
Yes, that's right. I'm so looking forward to eating this.
All right, so I think that's pretty well mixed up.
All right.
So we're going to put a little bit of this filling in, and then I'm going to let you have the fun of just basically folding it up over that.
Give us a little bit more, actually. We're probably going to want about 1/4 of the mixture. So,
and Dr. Nerida is making it the easy way, which is a smart way. Don't let physics work against you, work with it.
Yes. So we're just going to pleat this around the sides.
And as you can see, even with the paper, it's sticking.
Yeah. Of course, I didn't use the extra flour because I just put it straight on the baking paper. And I don't know about you, I don't like a lot of flour on my pastry. And that's it. So then it goes back in the fridge because this is so soft. It goes back in the fridge for 10 minutes. You're going to slide that onto a baking tray, baking sheet, and then we put it in the oven.
We're going to put the oven to 375, and then you're going to cook it for about 30 minutes. You'll want to make sure that the filling is bubbling and that the outside is kind of browned, toasted.
You ready? It's that time.
The moment of truth when we get to really experience what this is all built up to.
Okay, here we go.
No, it's good. It's full of great stuff, delicious flavors.
That is wonderful. It's better than a pizza. Much better. Oh, it tastes so healthy, apart from the dough. But this is a special treat, remember? Thank you so much for bringing that to us, Phil. You've got to try this. I know it's a bit of work, but try it just once. If you didn't catch all the ingredients, remember the recipes are on our website. Now back to Lizzie, whose boyfriend led her into heroin use. Her parents successfully intervened and sent her to a school that included rehab. She was doing so well until she ran into the same boy and fell back into daily IV heroin use again. See what happened next.
Exotic dancing is the career I chose when I hit about the age of 18, 18 and a half. And by the age of 19, my cutting had gotten out of control. It became just a whole different world. It went to going to bed in my own bed at night, eating with my family, to getting off of work at 5 or 6 in the morning and going to sleep and having to wake up with, I always had to have a needle by my bed or a bottle cap or a lighter or a pack of cigarettes or anything that would change my mood. And if I didn't, I'd be terrified. You know, from when you're little, you have to go to sleep with a stuffed animal. It changes when you're older and you're an addict, so you have to go to sleep with a lighter in your hand. And I didn't know where to turn, who to go to, except for a razor blade. I was so hurt, I needed to find a way out, and it left me with scars all the way up my arm, and I was ashamed, I was embarrassed, and I was scared. It kind of became a reality, seeing how it deteriorated my body, how much I weighed, was losing my hair, I had scars up my left arm, and I never really wanted to be sober. I didn't want to feel sober. I didn't want to look around and face reality. I'd rather live in an imaginary world in my head and just feel like everything would be fine. But at about 19 years old, I found out I was pregnant for the second time. And this was with a boyfriend who is now in prison, and I was scared, I was nervous, I didn't know what to do. And so I went home, my mom again asked me, we'll make an appointment. It's okay, we'll go, let's go. So I ended up getting my second abortion at the age of 19, and it became normal. Decided, shut it up, shut off all feelings towards it. My parents never knew I danced and I did that kind of stuff. You know, they always knew I lived at friends' houses and tried to manage off of what I had, but I always feared telling my parents the truth or why I was scared, what I was doing, because I didn't want them to see me as what I was becoming, what I thought I was turning myself into. I think my lowest point when I knew I needed help was when I got my last abortion, and I'm 19 years old and I'm hooked on heroin, and I didn't know how to feel. I didn't know what to do. So I went home and I tried to overdose again and wound up in the hospital, which is scary because it's different from saying I want to kill myself, so I'm going to try, and then waking up in a hospital bed facing reality, the fact that you tried to do it and didn't succeed. I was just terrified of reality. I didn't want to face what was actually happening and my emotions behind it.
I'm sure her parents were so relieved that she didn't succeed. The guest on today's show is Dr. Gary Hopkins, director of the Center for Prevention Research at Andrews University. He has extensive experience in international research. And an Australian study he was involved in found 8 protective factors for youth high-risk behavior. Here he explains.
There's a very common notion that information changes behavior. And so if a person is obese, what you need to do is tell them what makes you obese, and suddenly their weight's going to go away. Or the assumption is if you tell a smoker that smoking is dangerous, they'll suddenly quit. Well, you know what? If it was that easy, we could solve the obesity problem across the world with a DVD. We could make it out, send it out, people would watch it, they all lose weight, and then the problem would be over. Information is a lousy predictor of behavior, actually. You need it. Mm-hmm. It's an important part of life. You should know these things. You should know smoking causes lung problems and heart disease and circulation problems and all the kinds of things that it does. You should know that. But because you know that, doesn't mean that all of a sudden your behavior is going to change, because behaviors are very, very difficult. Information isn't so difficult for most people, but changing behaviors can be miserably difficult. Most people never change a behavior in their life, not one. And so we got to go beyond on information alone.
Yeah, but parents do need, and teachers, the school system needs to convey some information.
But we've actually studied, and that was, this is part of that same paper, we've actually studied parent-child communication and what makes the message effective. And we did that. We did a study in the Caribbean where we asked kids to rate their relationship with their parent on a scale of good to bad, or excellent to lousy, or whatever our scale said. And what we found out is that when parents have a great relationship with their kids, their communication works. When they don't have a great relationship with the kids, the communication doesn't work. And we asked the kids, has your father ever talked about sex? Has your father ever talked about drugs? Has your mother ever talked about sex? Has your mother ever talked about drugs? How was your relationship with your father? How was your relationship with your mother? And then with that, we could say, do you ever had sex? Do you ever use drugs? And we could do the statistical tests that it takes to figure out whether that communication was effective or not. And the effective communication comes through great relationships, which isn't a big surprise, is it, if you've been through school? Because the teachers that seem like, it seems to many of us who've been through a lot of school, the teachers who taught us the most were the ones we liked the most, or the ones who may have liked us the most. And there was a relationship involved. It's just communication stuff.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So that, and what you're bringing out there too is another one of the things that you found, which is the relationship with parents is
yeah, it's that relationship that drives the effective communication. So the information is good if the relationship's good.
So the information put on the right carrier.
Exactly.
And
you always need the information, but just not information alone.
Now another factor was self-esteem.
Self-esteem. Kids who think that they have value tend to be at lower risk. It doesn't make them perfect. And none of these things do, by the way. It doesn't make them perfect. What we find out is the closer we stay, or the more of these protective factors that the kids are exposed to, as they navigate through life, they may deviate from the middle, but they don't deviate far. Now, if they don't have any protective factors, they get involved with risk behaviors way more. And with more protective factors, they may go out and have a cigarette, but they don't have two. They may go out and try something, but they're not going to try it severely and go back to it. And your question was?
So tell us, what is self-esteem? How do we build that into it?
Okay, self-esteem is your perception of whether you believe that other people think you have value. If you think that I think that you're valuable, and you think that I'm a credible person, you tend to believe that you have value. Now, if you grew up in a home where your mom or your father or your grandmother, whoever was raising you, says to you, you were a mistake. You've never been any good. You're a nobody. You tend to believe you're a nobody. So why wouldn't you get involved with things that made you feel better if you actually believe that you're a nobody? Self-esteem tends to be well-developed by the age of 4, 5. Yeah, so if you're trying to give kids self-esteem past that age, you're really trying to fix self-esteem. So what we have to do with these young kids, whether it be in church or on the streets or wherever it is to remind them how much value they have. And to smile at them and give them those positive vibes. Man, you're doing a great job, but you can't lie to them. You can't say, listen, you're great at math, and they don't know what 2 times 2 is. But you can identify what they do well and reinforce what they do well, and that ends up being more protective for risk behaviors. But you need other things along with the communication, along with some of the other things we wrote about in that article, in order to strengthen the protective factors that are there.
Reinforcing strength is important for affirmation, but it also helps them dig deep and achieve more. On the other side of the break, get ready for Sean, but before that, think about this. One day, Jesus was surrounded by crowds, and several mothers approached with their infants, asking him to bless them. Thinking they were doing him a favor, the disciples tried to send them away. But Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me. Don't prevent them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these." And in spending time with the children, he was building their self-esteem by letting them know how much he valued them. And at the same time, he's telling us to include and not ignore them. Why? Because we need to learn from their sweet natures, their sense of awe and wonder, and most of all, their simple trust. By affirming these mothers, Jesus reminds parents everywhere that he wants them to bring their children to him. And just as he bundled these little ones in his arms and gave them each a blessing, he does the same for every child that's brought to him today. Science now tells us that when we nurture spirituality in our children, we are preventing substance use, risk-taking, and depression. We're enlarging their brains and increasing their IQ. So teach your kids how to come to Jesus every day and learn from them absolute trust. We're back, and it's our moving moment. Sean, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I'm ready to move.
You are?
Yeah.
Well, I'm ready to make you move.
All right. Uh-oh.
Let's go. We're going to jump right into it. Let's assume that everyone has watched us before and they know how to warm up, okay? What I want you to do is take your weight, and sometimes having the weight in your hand, right? Of course, you know, adds resistance, right? But what we're gonna do is an alternating lunge, all right? We're gonna start with an alternating lunge. All the way here. Take a nice deep breath, all right? I want you to keep on continuing, right? Now, the beauty of the lunge is that it's working the quad, the heart rate is going up. It allows you to engage the core because you want to point your chest forward. The last thing you want to do is do this with your lunge. All right? You want to keep that core tight. Do two more. One on each side. Yep. And perfect. Drop the weight for a second. So I love to use lower body exercises and then jump to upper body exercises and do a core exercise. All right? So have a seat right here.
All right.
Keep the body nice and firm. You know, if you've never sat on a stability ball before, just sitting on the stability ball is a challenge, right? Yep. So what we're gonna do is take this, right here, point the palms forward, right there, right by your shoulder, and we're gonna do presses. Aim for about 10 of them, all right? Go all the way up, press, perfect. Now remember, you gotta keep the body nice and tight.
We sure do, otherwise we will end up on the floor.
Or you're gonna end up right on the floor, right. We're gonna aim for 10 of those. Give me two more. Set your timer for about, for 10 if you wanna do 10, or you can set your timer for about 30 seconds. All right, three, two, and one. All right, come off, keep the weight in your hand. And we're gonna go into rows, okay? Come right over here. Bend over just a little bit, just like that. Extend the arm all the way out and pull the weight all the way up. Again, you can aim for about 10 to 15 reps, or you can set your timer for about 30 to 45 seconds. Either way, it's a good challenge. Choose a weight that's gonna challenge you. Extend all the way out. Give me two more. One and two. Stand up nice and tall. Now, last one. Weight is right here. And I want you to come all the way up just like that. Work your delt back here, nice and slow. When you get to this position here, you're squeezing that delt. All right, don't lose the opportunity there. Right here, all the way back up and back down. All right, again, 10 to 15 reps or 30 to 45 seconds. Three, two, and one. And I'm gonna show you how this works. You take that weight and go back to your lunges. Go back to the lunges, come on.
Ooh.
You're my client today, come on, yes. Yes, one, come on, two, three. Give me two more.
We had enough moving yet.
Four, come on, and five. Nice work, have a seat.
Ooh.
All right, have a seat. This is how you burn calories. You can minimize the rest in between. Point the palms forward, aim for 10 to 15 reps, go. Yes, come on, two, give me three more. One, come on, two, here you go, three. All right, pop up, there you go, pop up. Go right to your rows. We're gonna burn those calories today. We said we're gonna move, right? Bend them, yep, boom, there you go. Two, give me three more. One, come on, you got it. Two, and three, stand up nice and tall. Burn those calories, yes. It burns. It's a great feeling, yes. Isn't it?
It burns.
You said we're gonna move today, right? This is all about moving, right? 30 minutes?
I thought we were gonna move.
No, I am, look at the heavy weight. Five, four, three, two, one. You're an excellent partner.
Oh.
Is it my turn? No.
Yeah.
So again, the beauty of burning calories, right?
Yeah.
Is you can either work out longer, which is not, you don't always have the time.
Don't always have the time.
Right?
No.
Or you can minimize the time and the rest keeps your heart rate up a little bit and you're just burning those calories post-workout.
Right.
Which is awesome, right?
Yeah, it is.
All right, let's stretch it out. We use those quads, right? So let's work on some balance. Take one leg. Oh, this is tough. It is tougher than it looks, right? You wanna stretch the quads. You've done those lunges with the weight. Three, two, one, bring it down. Then switch. Get a good stretch. Point the chest forward. Take a deep breath. All right, relax, all right? One another great exercise, take your right knee, put it right here, and push back. You're working a little bit of the balance. I know, it's not easy. It is not easy. And switch. You gotta stretch after you work out or you wake up the next morning and you're gonna say, go healthy for good, did that for me. Did that.
And it will remind you to
it will
watch
remind you.
The show.
It will. All right, relax. Open and close. Alternate your right hand on the top and your left hand on the top. Take a nice deep breath. Shake it out. and you are good.
Well, thanks.
You're very welcome.
Good.
You're very welcome.
Are we ever too old to begin a physically active lifestyle? A 2009 study of 1,900 seniors would argue no. At age 70, the survival rate of those who were physically active was 2 times that of those who did not exercise. At age 85, the rate was 3 times higher. The study found that even starting physical activity very late in life was beneficial. No matter your age, a physically active life is another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for your questions. Someone called and asked, what kind of food should someone who suffers from insomnia eat in order to sleep better? Well, there are many herbs you can take for insomnia, like chamomile, hops, catnip, lobelia, peppermint, number of things. Many foods contribute to insomnia and help to cause it. Things like caffeine, high-fat foods close to bed, cheese, and then flavorings with monosodium glutamate and similar substances. Then there are spices that we often use. If they're hot to the tongue, they're gastric irritants, but they also irritate the nerves. So I recommend only using spices like cumin, coriander, turmeric, paprika, if you don't want to spoil a good night's sleep. Now, some of the important things to get a good night's sleep is exposure to natural light during the day, physical activity, so preferably exercise outdoors every day, and don't eat within 4 hours of bedtime. Now, Mary asks, what is the recommended calcium intake? And someone else texted, will taking calcium tablets be bad for the heart? Well, there's new evidence that says 1,000 milligrams or more of calcium a day is detrimental for heart disease. So it's better to get your calcium in your diet from things like green leafy vegetables, sesame seeds, tahini, tofu. They all have plenty of calcium in them. Someone else texted, both of my parents were diagnosed with Alzheimer's. My dad passed away 6 years ago. My mother is now not in good health from Alzheimer's. I'm 55. My mind sometimes gets clouded. What can I do to enhance my thinking and brain power? Well, there are two really important things that you need to do. The commonest cause of dementia is atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries to the brain. So do all you can to keep your arteries clear. Check out some of our shows online that deal with heart disease or buy our cardiovascular health series in the Hope Channel store. The other thing is to do is exercise. This is the most powerful intervention for dementia in old age. And it's to do vigorous physical activities in your 50s. And that's right now for you because you're 55. So do it now and you'll be able to prevent it. And you will freshen your mind, freshen your brain by doing that. Last message. Text message, what can you tell us about treating diabetes with alpha-lipoic acid? Alpha-lipoic acid is an antioxidant. It occurs naturally in the body in every one of our cells. It helps, though, when you take it orally or intravenously, it helps to lower blood sugar levels. It's able to kill free radicals, which are high in people with diabetes. And people with diabetic peripheral neuropathy, that's the nerve pain, the burning, itching, tingling, numbness in hands and feet that goes up the limbs, that can be helped by alpha-lipoic acid. Researchers believe that alpha-lipoic acid helps improve insulin sensitivity, so it actually helps to control your diabetes in that way. Thanks for those questions. They were great. Remember, you can phone, email, text, or Facebook. Now, come on down to the supermarket. Limes come in 2 main types, Tahitian and Mexican. The true lime is the Mexican lime. Native to Malaysia, it arrived in Florida in the early 1900s and became a popular crop in Florida Key. Thus its other name, key lime. And now you're probably thinking of key lime pie, which is a delicious way to use them. Limes are loaded with vitamin C. The British merchant navy knew that and they gave limes to their sailors to prevent scurvy. In fact, they ate so many limes, they were called limeys. Limes are often used to accent the flavor of foods and beverages. So try a twist of lime in your water this summer or squeeze it on your salads. For a tasty salad, bon appetit. I'm interviewing Dr. Gary Hopkins, who works with communities and governmental agencies around the world to design effective programs to prevent high-risk behaviors amongst adolescents. I asked him to explain resilience and how we can build it into our children.
Resilience is the capacity to maintain competent functioning in face of major life stressors. So what that means in common language, not that that's horribly complicated, what it means is that my mother's an alcoholic and I'm not. It means that I was sexually abused, but I haven't become a sexual abuser. There's good literature on children of alcoholics who do well. Mm. It's coming out of the bad side of town. Where's the bad side of town? Is it in Christchurch, New Zealand? Where is it in New Zealand?
Yeah.
In Christchurch? In the cities? What's in Auckland cities, somewhere?
In Auckland, let's say.
So it's in Auckland. And coming out of that side of town where the kids are more likely to get involved with heroin and cocaine and doing well. It's beating the odds. It's the good kid from the bad side of town. That's what resilience is. And really, if you consider how much stuff is on the street facing our kids today, or just in life, or how much garbage is on the internet, all of our kids need to be resilient. They need to be able to beat the odds. They need to be able to face the fact that there's stuff on the internet, all kinds of sexual stuff for sure, that they're going to see. It isn't an issue of will they see it or not. Of course they're going to see it. It's everywhere. It's all over the place. And we need for them to do well in spite of the fact that they're facing obstacles and they're being exposed to risk, and that's resilient.
And so how do we put that into them? How do we build
that? Well, can I tell you a story?
Sure.
I taught a class in Kenya once. Loma Linda University had a Master of Public Health class there, and I went over to teach. There were 65 students in my class, and I gave a lecture on resilience, and I talked about how some kids are raised in high-risk environments and do well. And I said, so is anybody in the classroom resilient? And a lady raised her hand. And I said, so what's your risk? And she said, my father was an alcoholic who married 7 times. And married 7 times means your front door was opening and closing a lot. And there were more than 7 ladies that came to that front door, you can be sure of. And so I said, well, you should have had sex at an early age, multiple sexual partners, probably teen pregnancy, possibly multiple teen pregnancies. You should have been at risk for substance use, multiple substance uses, and academic failure. That was your risk. What do you do today? She says, I'm a doctor in a mission hospital. I said, wow. So what happened? And she said, well, when I was a little girl, a lady came to me and said, can I take you to church this weekend? The people there are pretty nice. Now, what the lady didn't say to her was, can I take you to church today? The preacher really preaches well. She said, the people are really nice. And she said, yeah. So, and as I recall, the girl was like 8 years old or something like that. And so she went to church that weekend, and the people were really nice. And the people were so nice that they engaged her, and they included her. And she kept going back, and they kept being nice, and then she wanted to go back. And so if they had activities, she was part of the activities. The church put her through school, they put her through college, they put her through medical school. And because that lady said, can I take you to church? And because the church was really nice, that interaction created a girl from a very high-risk environment and turned her into a very productive missionary in hospital caring for people who are much less fortunate than she.
Wonderful story.
All because somebody cared.
Great story. We have more from Dr. Hopkins after the break, so don't go away. Now we're back with Lizzie, who was featured in the Unhooked series on Hope Channel. She got into drugs at 15. Marijuana was followed by cocaine, and that was followed by heroin. Dropping out of school, she became an exotic dancer, working nights and doing drugs by day. She couldn't face reality, so drugs, alcohol, and cutting were her escapes. At 19, she found herself pregnant again, went for another abortion. But that hit her hard emotionally, and she tried to suicide. Waking up in hospital, no drugs or alcohol nearby to escape, she was forced to face reality.
I never thought that searching out to find help and to find a drug facility would lead me to a Christian life. The first time I ever picked up a Bible, I didn't know what a psalm, a proverb, or anything was. And I realized that throughout all of my experiences, all of my overdoses, all of what I was going through, that the only thing I had to do was pick up the Bible and open to Psalm 139 and realize that God knows your heart, and He knows the desires of your heart. He knows when you go to sleep, and He just knows you. It just totally changed when I met all these women who have amazing stories and come out of them and live through them and just can share it and give me inspiration. And just knowing that I have a 24-hour person to talk to, and He never sleeps, never stops watching you, and it's a blessing. is to realize that he never forsaked me and he never forgot about me. He showed me things and put people in my life to help me learn that I'm never gonna be who I used to be. You know, I honor where I came from. I don't regret anything I've done. And I'm living where I am now. I live in my present and I'm creating my future day by day. And to this day, I'm 3 months sober on the 30th. July 30th was my sobriety date. And most importantly, he's giving me a life that I never thought I'd have back. It feels good to be sober and a Christian and realize that I couldn't have done any of this if God wasn't here helping me.
What a difference he's made in her life. We're talking today with Dr. Gary Hopkins. I asked him if there's a particular time of the day when kids are most at risk.
When kids get up, and this is across the world, when kids get up in the morning, the time of day when they're at highest risk is the time when they get out of school and mom and dad aren't home yet. And they're called latchkey kids. And so they're unattended to.
Right.
So in America, the highest risk time of day for teen pregnancy is between the hours of 3 and 6 in the afternoon. The highest risk time of day for engaging in delinquent behavior for kids is between the hours of 3 and 8 in the afternoon. So getting kids involved with people who care, in the resilience literature, from people who are going to be nice to kids and who can talk to kids and who are safe with kids, during the time of day when they're at the highest risk is between 3 to 6, 3 to 8 in the afternoon. And in some cultures, those hours are a little bit different. In the Caribbean, we see it's more like 1 to 10 in the afternoon. It's a longer period of time. It's critical. You've got to keep kids busy. I was in Chile once, and someone said, I was doing a TV interview, and they said, can you tell us how to prevent high-risk behaviors in 1 minute? They said, we have 2 minutes, but it'll take a minute to translate. I said, yeah. No, you can't. Yeah, I can do that. So the guy says, how do you prevent high-risk behaviors? And I said, you keep kids busy with adults who have values. Mm. And that's really the heart and soul of it all, is where are the kids and who are they with? And if they're with somebody who has high values and they're at lower risk, you are in a prevention strategy. Things are going pretty well.
Right. Now, I think the last thing is service activities.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think links in with what you're saying about after school.
So getting kids involved in helpful activities to other people, and I could talk to you about this for hours, but and if you do that during the hours of the afternoon when they're at highest risk, now you're onto something good. Kids who get involved with service activities, it's the best practice in preventing teen pregnancy. Yeah, like that. My granddaughter's helping me blow snow in the wintertime, and we're avoiding teen pregnancy. How do you like that? Kids who get involved in service activities get better grades in school. So we're out pushing the snow machine around. Someone says, what are you doing? I say, we're helping Lexi get better grades in school. And it's fascinating. It's higher self-esteem. It's community orientation for life. And it really comes out of the Bible where it says, did you feed me when I was hungry? Did you clothe me when I was naked? In Matthew 25, and what he's saying is they want you to take care of the needs of other people.
Because it's part of your salvation.
Exactly. I mean, that's the sheep and the goat story, no? I really want you to do this. I mean, I want you to do it so much that your salvation's dependent upon it. And that's really what it says in Matthew 25. And
so many people today say, well, what's in it for me?
Yeah.
And this is such a strong message.
Yeah. What the service thing looks like when you do it properly is that if when you go home and you decide you want to get involved with a community service project, you find 3 or 4 kids and say, hey, we're going to go help somebody do something, and it's going to last 20 minutes. It's not going to take your whole day up. And so the first step is tell them what you're going to do. And sometimes they'll like it, and sometimes they'll say, let's do something else. Yeah, we're going to do this first, and we'll do something more fun next time. So first, tell them what you're going to do. The second thing is go with them to do it. Don't send them out to do it. You're putting them at high risk then. Now they're working on to their own devices. The third thing is when you're done, say to them, what did we just do? Oh, that was pretty cool. That little lady came out and she said thank you and she smiled at me and it really made me feel good.
So you're reflecting on it.
Reflecting. And reflection component is the most important part of the whole deal. When you do that, you are engaged in a teen pregnancy prevention program. You are engaged in a program where kids will come out with a better opportunity to get better grades in school, higher self-esteem, become community-oriented for life, and really following God's will. Go help somebody who needs some help. change your activities often. Don't keep doing the same thing every single time. Do it once or twice a week. Don't do it for 2 minutes. Don't do it for 2 hours. You'll wear them out. And talk to them a lot while you're out there. Be that non-family adult that's so important in the lives of kids that we know through research is so important.
And finally, school is community. What does that mean, and how might teachers engage in this process?
Okay, the questionnaire that I got from a researcher once, and it's a questionnaire that measures school's community, and what it says, and these are kids in the third, fourth, and fifth grade. Do you like school? Are people nice to you at school? Do they care for you at school? It's just, this is real simple stuff. So imagine this. Do you like church? Are people nice to you at church? Do you care for you at church? Does anybody talk to you when you go to church? Or did you walk past them? I mean, think about it, okay? And when they like school and people care for them at school, all of a sudden their grades get better. They use fewer drugs, sexual behaviors. All these risk factors start to go away. Now imagine if you are raised in a home where you have, and not all, you know, only about half kids have two parents in the home, in America anyway. You need to have someone who's talking to you, and if it's not your parents, then it has to be a non-family adult. You need to be engaged in service activities. If it's not with your parents, it's by some adult who cares. You need to have someone who's going to talk to you and form a relationship with you. You need to have, and you start putting these things together, after school activities, community service, the communication piece, the self-esteem piece. All of a sudden, you find out all these fit together. It's not like, please go do the self-esteem thing, do something else. No, we want to do them all. And we want to get them all into the lifetime as often as possible.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been great having you.
Thank you very much.
From this week's series, it's come through loud and clear that it's never too early to start prevention strategies with your children. Build a strong, nurturing bond and affirm them for good behaviors and skills as often as you can. The same information about drugs, alcohol, smoking, safe sex, and other healthy behaviors need to come from home, from school, from community, and also from church. And even if you're not a parent, you can be involved in a child's life to create resilience within them. Teach your kids how to say no and that it's okay to do it. Keep them busy after school with adults who have values and get them involved in service projects at least a couple of times a week. And then have them reflect on all those kind deeds that they do. Teachers, engage the kids. Be kind to them. Help all kids in class to have a sense of belonging and pride. Help them to strive to achieve and show your pleasure in them when they do. That's all from me today. I hope you've enjoyed this special series on preventing youth high-risk behaviours. Thanks for joining us on Go Health for Good. I'll see you next time.